Chris Olave.
Will.
Wait, can we like keep going though until we get it? Because I'm gonna get it.
Is it
Okay.
wait? Is it a college jersey or did you get the NFL player? Like,
It's an Ohio State jersey.
Okay. I didn't know if you
Past
bought
player.
like. Oh wow.
Offensive
Type
guy.
boy.
What'd you say, Will?
You got Michael Thomas?
No.
Dwayne Haskins.
No.
Is he Strude?
No. It's a good guess.
Joe Burrow.
No. No.
Wow.
That was a good guess.
That's actually kind of good. What, did Zeke go to Ohio State?
Zeke did go
he
to
did
Ohio
go to
State.
Ohio State, but
did
I did
you
not get
Zeke?
That.
Jackson Smith and Jigba.
No.
Oh, that was my guess, too. Fuck, who else went to Ohio State?
Currently in the NFL.
Currently in the NFL.
Do not search up list of Ohio State players, Griff.
Oh, I just wanted to look up running.
You guys should know this.
Oh.
He got drafted recently.
Drafted recently?
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 Recently, as in he got drafted in the last 5 years.
Oh, boy.
He's like a premier back in the NFL right now?
I would say he's a very recognizable name in the NFL.
Fuck, I can't think of any Ohio
State. On an NFC team.
NFC team. That helps
a running back.
He's not a running back.
Oh.
Oh.
He's a receiver.
He's on a team that somebody from part of my take roots for.
Justin Fields.
No.
Terry McLaurin. Terry McLaurin. It's Terry McLaurin.
Fuck. Shit.
Oh my god.
Who the fuck else is on that team?
DJ Moore?
No.
I don't even know what college
that'd be. That'd be a crazy jersey to have.
College DJ Moore went to.
Fuck. Who's that? Who's the tight end on the Commanders?
No.
Oh, not him.
An NFC team.
Brian Robinson didn't go to fucking Ohio State.
No, he went to Alabama.
Who's their backup?
It's not a running back.
Oh, fuck. That's right. You said it wasn't a running back.
Not a running back, not a receiver, not a quarterback.
Oh, Chase Young?
Yep.
That's sick. Holy shit.
That's so fresh.
The stitching.
Oh, it's legit Stitch.
It's legit. Wow.
$75 on Fanatics.
Wow.
That's a really good deal.
I went to LSU and I just got a polo.
Polo's sick, though.
Oh, I loved it.
You look like you belong.
Should this be a cold opening to the episode?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Anyways, welcome back. It's the boys. We're not even going to do an intro like music to this or anything. Screw it. Stav talking about going to Ohio State soon. Stav, when is that coming up?
3 weeks. November
10th. 3 weeks. We got me fresh off a trip to LSU. So screw it. I'm gonna dive right into it. We're gonna get into our college football recap as well. I'm gonna start off talking about this game between LSU and Auburn, the Battle of the Tigers. And what a weekend it was. Sold out stadium, 102,000 of them, and they had like seven different like fight songs and chants, and everybody in the stadium knew them. It was insane. LSU basically, like, there's not much to say about the game. LSU dropped a fat shit on Auburn. It was insane. Malik Nabers is doing Malik Nabers type things. Jaden Daniels is starting to look like a guy that could sneak into maybe day two, maybe even day one of the NFL draft if he can keep putting up numbers like this. He went 20 for 27, threw for 325 yards, three touchdowns, threw a pick, but hey, some people like picks. Some people say it's a bit of a risk. Some people say it means the quarterback's not scared. They ran all over Auburn, ended up winning the game 48-18. Just an absolutely beautiful weekend. Met Paul Skeens, the number one pick in the MLB draft. met his girlfriend Libby Dunn, the number one pick in every college man's draft. Just a riveting weekend, a riveting weekend, unbelievable experience. Stav, you have one of those coming up soon with two Big Ten teams. Going to be an absolute experience. I'm going to pass this episode over to you from here on out.
Yeah, absolutely. Griff, you forgot that you also met overtime Megan.
Oh, I didn't forget.
Oh, yeah. Another great prospect. She's put some great film out there. But let's start off. Let's go to the Pac-12. And we're going to talk about Oregon versus Washington, the game of the weekend, boys. And this was a game going into the week that we thought the winner of this game would end up being in the top four eventually, because this is a huge win. And who won that game? Washington. Griff, talk to me a little bit about Michael Penix, because at the beginning of the year, he was on some people's radars. He was, if you were going to talk about Washington, if you were going to talk about the Pac-12, you were going to bring up Michael Penix. But he wouldn't be the first name that you brought up. But now, after this game, after what he's done up to this point, where are you ranking him in terms of quarterbacks nationally?
It's top three or bust. The thing that scares me is he's a lefty, and with the stripes on the ball, lefty, the spiral just doesn't look the same. It doesn't look good. But he's a winner, and he is a grinder. You saw him down three in the fourth quarter, sitting on the bench freestyling about how he was going to come back in this game to his teammates. Did you guys see that on Twitter? He's on the bench freestyling before he's going out for the game-winning drive, and he gets the job done. He wills his team into these tough games and into these games where they can hang into it and come out victorious. He's done it, and he's going to continue to do it. I think this is a national championship game team. I think that they can make it. They've proven themselves. This was a huge win over Oregon. They have a few more big games, and they see USC in 3 weeks. And I think I love Washington to beat them as well. I think that they are the most complete team in the Pac-12. It starts with that quarterback, but they also have that wide receiver who's going to solidify himself probably as a top 10 pick. He's insane. He's probably the best receiver in the Pac-12 right now. All you Travis Hunter fans can hop off for a minute. This is the team out of the Pac-12. We've talked about how glorious this conference is going to be in their final season, and what a story it would be if Washington was the team to take the trophy to end it all.
I mean, yeah. I mean, as well, Michael Penix did his thing on Saturday. He did a great job. He got the ball out there. He threw for 408 yards, had a day. So did Bo Nix. But, I mean, sorry, taking a look at, like, obviously the Pac-12 or anything like that, Washington's a solid squad. They're very, very good. And like you said, Griff, what a way for them to end the Pac-12's basically career with them winning a national championship.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It really comes down to the guys up front. You know, you look at the defensive and offensive lines for Washington. In each game that they've played in, they've been the key factor outside of Michael Penix. And they're allowing them to stay in games. And they get the fourth and inches stops. They get those quick goal line stops, holding opponents to three, making them take longer field goals than anticipated. This, Griff, you said it best. This team is very complete. And I'm very interested to see how this team scales off against teams like USC, who we're going to get to right now, who traveled to South Bend, faced Notre Dame, and lost. They look bad. Will, how much does this game hurt Caleb Williams in terms of stardom and where he's going to end up going forward and for his future?
Well, I think this is a big game in his career, especially Notre Dame being, what's the word? They're not in a conference. I don't know what I can't think of the correct
They're
word.
Independent.
They're independent. They're independent, which says a lot about one Notre Dame, but also says a lot about USC playing them and them obviously losing that game. This is a lot for Caleb Williams. I mean, he's expecting to do all these things. I think the reports came out today. He wants, like, part ownership in the team he gets drafted to, and he's talking all about this stuff about, oh, like, I'm just going to stay another year if, like, poverty franchises want to draft me and all this kind of nonsense. And it's like a lot of people would love to be in the predicament that he is in right now, and I feel like he's taking advantage of the situation.
Yeah, and you know, we talked a little about Washington, and I talked about how I'd like to think that Washington is a better overall football program than the Trojans, and a large reason why is because of the egos, and it's everyone on this team. It's the freshman, it's the quarterback, it's the head coach, it's everybody. It's everybody in the football program. And to go and get your face smacked by Notre Dame, that's a classic Pac-12 like move. You go off, you play an out of conference game, you get smacked in the teeth. I think overall that this is actually going to end up benefiting this team in the long run. And looking back at it, when it's all said and done, the end of the season, Notre Dame's going to be a ranked team. They're going to see this one loss that USC took as not as bad as it looks right now when it comes down to the end of the season in terms of rankings. So it's not the end of the world for this team. They're still going to be in the Pac-12 championship game. They're still going to have a chance to win it, and they're still going to have a chance to make the college football playoff. Overall, the Fighting Irish looked good in this game. It was just a classic one of, hey, we're going to use our big boys. We're going to use what you don't have. We're going to win this game in the trenches. Your skilled position players are going to feel those big boys on our defense. And we're just going to out physical you. And that's how we're going to win this football game. That's exactly how they did it. And they did it like every classic Notre Dame team would do it. It's a classic case of Notre Dame versus a West Coast team. I just feel like it always has to be the Fighting Irish to win games like this. USC, their season isn't over, and I really feel like this is, it's hard to say a good loss, especially in college football, but they needed a loss like this. They needed to feel pain because there's too many egos over there, stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You said it best. And I really want to stay on the topic of both of these teams in the Pac-12 when we're talking about Washington and USC, and specifically the quarterback position, because we're looking at two generational prospects, if you may, with Michael Penix in Washington and obviously Caleb Williams, who's probably going to be the first overall pick. But Griff, do you think that there's a world where Michael Penix overtakes Caleb Williams and becomes that first pick because his name is trending up? He's actually minus odds right now to win the Heisman. Do you think, with all of the negative press right now that's surrounding Caleb Williams, because it looks like he's bringing baggage wherever he goes, and as an NFL prospect, you do not want that, because let alone being the number one overall pick, you have insane pressure. You are expected to turn the franchise around completely. You are expected to go in and immediately produce. We're looking at how Bryce Young is getting scrutinized right now, who he was a phenomenal college player, and we kind of expect him to pick it up eventually when things turn around for this franchise in general. But Caleb Williams says he's going to stay at USC if he's going to be the first overall pick to a team that is not favorable for him, which we've seen, but we're never seeing the demands that he has with the ownership. But long story short, I went off on a little tangent. Do you see a world where Michael Penix gets selected first overall over Caleb Williams?
You know what, Stava? I think that the general manager with the first overall pick, they're gonna look at a few different things. They're gonna look at the age difference, and even though it's 2 years, that could be a world's difference to an NFL team. That's 2 more years that they could have that quarterback under their wing. Say that even could be a psychological thing where they're like, hey, screw it. If we don't think that this kid's ready to start day one, we can sit him down for a year and he'd still be a year younger than what Penix would have been if we drafted him and started him right away. And there's a few other things that go into it. Like, I mean, this is a generational talent. People have been talking about this kid for years and years on. We have seen what he is able to do on the football field. He's taken a tough loss. We have to see how he bounces back from that. The only world that I could imagine Caleb Williams not being the number one overall pick if these shenanigans continue on, with things like him saying he wants partial ownership in the team that drafts him. The only thing that can take a player down is their ego. I mean, when it comes to the NFL, an old man is drafting you. It's not someone that's going to be your boy. It's not someone that you're going to go out with, get drinks with, whatever that may be. You have to be a professional with them. And they love that. If they see a man and you talk about it, the reason why like CJ Stroud got drafted was because he got like a nice steak or something like that at dinner. They like a man's man. And if somebody's gonna go out there and be a drama queen, they're gonna be like, hey, we don't want this guy in our locker room. Like, that's not how we work around here. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think that Caleb Williams is going to turn his act around and maybe get his shit together. And once again, why I said I think this might be a good loss, we have to see how he bounces back from this. I just don't really see there being a world where Penix, you know, with that age and with what he's done in college, he's kind of bounced around. He was at Indiana before this, and he's going to be 23, maybe even 24 by the time he gets drafted. I just think that it has to be Williams with the number one overall pick.
You did.
Strike one. I'm right there with you with Caleb Williams. I feel like franchises just, you can't take up on that opportunity of talent. But I also feel like a lot of franchises in the NFL are holding their business pretty tight with the egos, especially this year with the whole running back situation. A lot of teams are just trending not to really care too much about necessarily the players' feelings and what they're earning and what they want. They want the best player with the best talent, but they also want them to have a good head and shoulders on themselves and hold themselves accountable day in and day out. And I feel like Caleb Williams holding himself accountable, especially with this loss, seeing how he bounces back, will say a lot to all these owners out there looking to draft him come draft day. But I just don't see a world where Penix gets drafted before Caleb Williams, but it's really going to be an ego thing when it comes down to the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've never really seen a quarterback really have the demands, or a player in general, and I doubt he'll get ownership of wherever he goes, but it doesn't really make much sense to me why he's saying that he's going to hold out and wait a year until he goes into the NFL when – if you're the first overall pick, you're going to get drafted into a bad situation and you're there to start to fix it. That's the moral of the story. Look at what happened with Joe Burrow. He went in and basically, I don't want to say redshirt, he got hurt, but that's a AFC contender now. Caleb Williams could get drafted into a situation similar to that and he could go out and dominate and attract people. I don't understand his whole philosophy with this, but let's go outside of essentially the Pac-12 and talk about other news in college football. Brock Bowers, pretty much out for the rest of the season. The best player offensively for Georgia. This hurts. Are they going to stay at number one? Do you project them to slip a little bit throughout the season? Or what are your projections for Georgia now that their best offensive player is out?
I feel like they definitely are due to slip a little bit, especially with the loss of such an amazing offensive talent for them. I mean, obviously it's Georgia. They have good D-line. They have good O-line. They're always going to be solid. They're number one. Like, they always have the talent, so they're always going to find a way to win games. But like earlier on a couple weeks ago when they're holding these tight games, if they're still going in, week out, holding tight games, I expect them to probably slip up a couple times now they're down a target. It's really next man up for them, but I feel like they might slip a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, they have a few more ranked games coming up on their schedule, but if, you know, you're comparing their SEC schedules of the past, you could kind of call it a cakewalk with Mizzou, Ole Miss, and Tennessee. All three of those games coming in three consecutive weeks within the next month. And I just don't get their offense. I don't understand how this offense is going to work without a guy like Brock Bowers who – I mean, is leading this team in receiving by over 200 yards, and behind him is a receiver that I don't really love at all, and Rosmi Jack Saint. I just think that he's absolutely terrible. He's leading the team in receptions by more than 20 receptions. I mean, you want to talk about someone getting hurt and that being detrimental to a team. This is probably the last guy that they could have lost. Carson Beck, to me, just isn't it. They're going to have to rely on that ground game. Good thing that they had the line to do it. They always had the defense, and I see them winning out, and they're going to have a hell of a fucking tough game, in the SEC championship, because the SEC is tough this year, and even though Bama's not really there, there's still teams that could knock you down and get to you if you don't have a perfect week. And Georgia, who is used to having perfect weeks week in and week out, without their guy that they literally use – 4-5 times a drive, it's going to be tough for them, Staub. I don't see them winning the SEC this year if he's out for the rest of the season. If he comes back towards the end, even if he plays the last 2 weeks, I think that they have no issue. Without him, this team is nothing.
Yeah, especially offensively. It seems kind of stagnant, and it doesn't like we said, it makes no sense. You always think of Georgia having an insane running game, and we're not really seeing too much of it. And Brock Bowers is really the point of attack because he's probably one of their best blockers, especially in the open field. So with him being out, this makes this offense very one-dimensional, and I don't trust that quarterback to get it done. All right, let's go to the ACC. I wanted to talk about Florida State. I don't really like Florida State too much, but with their schedule going forward, they have a very favorable schedule, only facing one ranked team, and I believe it's Duke.
Yeah, they play Duke this week.
Yeah, exactly. They have Duke this week. That's their last ranked opponent as of right now, and they're sitting at 4 in the college football rankings, I believe. 3 or 4?
They're 4 right now.
They're 4. They're pretty much one game away from solidifying their spot in the college football playoff. Griff, where do you see this team finishing, and do you see them actually being a threat to compete in the national championship game?
It literally, after this week, we will know for sure where this team will be finishing, and I guarantee that they are going to beat Wake Forest. They're going to beat Pittsburgh. Miami won't give them that tough of a time. Miami's terrible this year. And then they play North Alabama, and then they get to play an SEC team that they're going to beat as well in Florida, which is going to help them out towards the end of the season. But Duke's going to give them a tough time, and Riley Leonard's going to give this defense a run for their money because he's a guy that just out of nowhere, he's making a play to get that first down, diving, putting his shoulder down into somebody to get those extra couple of yards because why not? He's going to tire out this defense. This is going to be a great test for this defense. I think that they win this game. I think that this is one of the best Florida State teams we've seen since the Jameis Winston days. This is a very good team. They can run the ball. They can throw the ball. Jordan Travis has been at the helm for them for a few years. Keon Coleman is looking like he should be a top 5 pick, in my opinion. And Michigan State fans are so salty because they had him. They had Keon Coleman not only on the football team but the basketball team at Michigan State. And now he's tearing it all up at Florida State. He's a guy that's going to carry this team to where they need to be, and that's the college football playoff. I don't know if they really have the best chance to win it all, but when you look at it, Stav, you know, there's Georgia, and we talk about how much we don't love them. Then we go to the Pac-12 and maybe a Washington, which I actually think has a solid chance to win the national championship game. And I think the next team behind that is these guys in Florida State. I think that they finish with the third seed, and they draw Washington, and I think Washington finds their way up to 2. I don't think Washington loses a game the rest of the year. I think that Washington wins the Pac-12 championship, and I think Florida State wins out the rest of the way. They solidify the 3, and that's going to be the greatest game of the year is Florida State versus Washington, two of the most complete teams in the nation.
Yeah, I mean, this game against Duke is going to be a tough one, as you said, Griff. I mean, given that this is their only ranked opponent they have left to finish out the season, it looks like they're on pace to win out, and so is Washington. And I'm almost right there with you. I think Florida State's going to make the college football playoff. They're going to make noise. They're going to get in there. They're going to do their thing, and so is Washington. I mean, we're pretty skeptical of the other teams that are going to be in this playoff so far. Obviously, it could be subject to change.
There's got to be a Big Ten team, too. There's no way there's going to be two teams from the same conference in this college football playoff. There can't be.
Yeah.
The only way I look at it, this would create chaos. So Michigan gets the number 1 seed. I'm saying for chaos, right? Or let me explain the games. If Ohio State beats Penn State this week, Penn State beats Michigan, and then Michigan beats Ohio State, what do you do? Because Michigan. Well, I'm saying, but are you going to take out Ohio State and Penn State when those two teams, their quality wins are against the other one's quality win?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it creates chaos, and that's what's great about the college football playoffs. Maybe Florida – that's where I'm saying Florida State could get out because they have one quality win on the year, and that's against LSU in week 1.
They'll play like a UNC – or they'll play someone in the championship game.
Yeah, but that game might come against an unranked opponent or someone in the bottom 5, in the bottom 10 of the ranks. So it's like the quality wins don't line up, and if you're going to compare resumes, Florida State's resume doesn't stack up against it. I'm saying if that scenario. So it's that triangle of chaos could make this college football playoff crazy, where we see Washington or Georgia at number one, Washington or Georgia at number two, and then three and four are two Big Ten teams. Kind of like what we saw last year with Ohio State and Michigan being two and four, or what, however you want to say it. That can create a lot of chaos. And I think that you can make an argument for each of those Big Ten teams to be in over Florida State, because the competition in the conference, Michigan hasn't really faced anybody, right? Up to this point, they've faced nobody. Ohio State went into South Bend and beat Notre Dame. And Penn State has an opportunity this weekend to go into Ohio State and upset Ohio State. And that might catapult them into the top four. And then Ohio State has an opportunity to go into Michigan and beat Michigan on their home turf. That's something that could very well happen, because Ryan Day has yet to really beat Michigan. That's his biggest knock. And if he can do that this year, I feel like the categories in itself are, okay, he just rewrote his entire – he took the monkey off his back. He beat Michigan. And then if Michigan goes and beats Penn State as they should – that just creates chaos, and that's what I want to see. I want to see chaos. Feed me all the chaos. All right, let's go and recap week six briefly. We'll start off with Kansas City at home versus Denver. This was a snooze fest. Will, I don't even really know what I want to ask you here, but are we going to take this kind of sloppy game from Kansas City to heart? Are we going to take that and say, all right, this is who Kansas City is. They're not the same teams of past. We have to give Eric Bieniemy his flowers. Or do you think, okay, come time for real football in December, this team is going to turn up. This team is going to be back to the dominant AFC. They're going to clearly win the AFC West. They're going to be the one seed in the AFC, and we can probably chalk them into the AFC Championship. Where on those ends of the spectrum do you put them?
I feel like we need to be more critical of the Chiefs here. I mean, they're playing in some sloppy games recently. I mean, they don't have the wide receivers like they used to. Travis Kelce's obviously at the helm of everything for them on offense. Patrick Mahomes has been slipping up here and there. I feel like they need to be kind of held a little bit more accountable. Obviously, I feel like when it comes said and done, I feel like I can't count them out in December, as you shouldn't. They just won the Super Bowl, and they do it every year. They manage to overcome whatever they're overcoming throughout the season, or they're at the top. They have that weird way where they play, where they, like, it feels like this is a kind of team where they're playing down to their opponent a little bit, but they're also showing out when it's time to show up. They've taken some weird losses on the year. They're in such a weird predicament. We need to see what they do this week in order for them to really see what goes on for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and you know, they don't have the offense that they had before, and they aren't going to have it this year. They don't have the weapons. They don't have the targets that they need. The good thing is, though, the AFC is wide open. You look at this conference, and I would say the Dolphins, the Bills, the Bills look terrible this week, too. Maybe the Ravens, if they're like, if something happens, in the Jags. And that doesn't stack up with the teams in the NFC. This is wide open, and when that's the case, the Kansas City Chiefs always have a chance. They're still at the top of this conference, and I really don't see anybody else winning it. When they need to win a game, they have just enough to win against every single team, and that just enough is Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce on the offensive side, and the defense, who has been stopping teams in the games that they won. This defense doesn't even look half bad, to be honest, throughout the past few weeks. Isaiah Pacheco is a guy that's going to step up when he needs to as well. That run game really has to open up throughout the rest of this season, because Patrick Mahomes cannot get the ball to these wide receivers. He's giving it to Kadarius Toney on dump downs because he can't go deep and catch a ball. He doesn't have anybody else. He literally doesn't have anybody else. I couldn't name you another wide receiver on that team.
They signed Mecole Hardman today.
No.
Yeah.
Today?
Yeah.
First 7th round pick.
Okay, Super Bowl or bust. I'm like, no, like, why are we acting like that's like Julio Jones in 2013? Like, no.
Well, Julio Jones just got sent back to the Eagles. Well, he was kind of the practice squad. I don't know where that's going to lead, but it's something.
He's going to get – he'll get a spot.
Yeah, he'll get called up. He'll get called up pretty soon. All right, next game on the list. We're not going to recap every game. We're going to talk about probably some key ones that are important to us. We're going to skip ahead a few, and we're going to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals versus Griff's Seattle Seahawks. Now, Griff, I'm going to let you lead off with this. The red zone offense was the reason why the Seahawks lost this game.
Yeah, I mean, in the second half, you go to the red zone four times, and you have 3 points to show for it. 3 points in the half, and the worst part is our defense. You know, they were keeping us in it this whole time. We had more than enough chances, and I have one person to blame, and that's DK Metcalf. Week in and week out, he screws us over with these 15-yard penalties. He gets literally one a week. And he has to get sidelined for a couple of plays. Hey, calm down. Maybe you should translate that into how hard you run your routes. Or maybe once you have the ball, use that energy to go into somebody's body. Maybe do something differently than smack someone in the face after the whistle. That's not football. Maybe you should have gone into the UFC at that point. And you only have 69 yards to show for it. We're paying him big money. We're paying him Pro Bowl money, and he doesn't have the Pro Bowls to show for it either. He is not accomplished. DK Metcalf has never done anything. That's why I don't have his jersey. I think he's a hell of a player, but I don't think he has the right to the ego that he has. He's not anything special. He has the chance to be. He has all the tools to be, but he's never showed it. He's never done anything for us in a big game. He had that one touchdown against the Eagles a few years ago in the playoffs, and we lost that game. It's like he hasn't done anything, and all he does is screw us over at the point. It's becoming like he's not the star that he is. Huh?
You beat the Eagles in that game.
Yeah, and then we lost the next week.
Yeah. I thought you said you lost that game.
No, I did say I'm still just upset. It was stupid because if we don't win the Super Bowl, then we lost. It's just – but, like, what I'm basically trying to say is, like, DK Metcalf swears that he, like, is a 14-time Pro Bowler, offensive player of the year, and he can just go out and smack people in the face week in and week out because they called him a pussy. Like, you're not a pussy. You're 6'4" and 230 pounds playing wide receiver. Go make plays for us. Go score touchdowns for us. And that's exactly what we needed in this game was DK Metcalf, and we didn't have
him. Yeah, I mean, they were in it to start off the game. One, this was my lock of the week, did not hit. Wasn't too thrilled about that one. But they were in it to start this game, and their defense really held them in for the rest of it. I mean, that second half was pretty bad. I mean, both these teams didn't look fantastic, but it was also just like one of those things. I really think, like you said, Griff, DK Metcalf was really at the helm of this whole team struggles yesterday. I mean, there was multiple clips surfacing during the game of one, obviously him slapping one of them, him getting like pissed off because he was wide open on a route. I feel like there's just a lot of issues going on with that. I don't know what's up with all that, but I feel like there's a lot going around with him. I feel like the wide receiver struggles with him, especially this year, has been an interesting one to say the least.
Right. I used the P word in a friendly manner. It was in a friendly manner. I apologize.
He'll accept that if he hears this clip. All right. Next game on the list. I want to talk about the Cleveland Browns versus San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah.
This game was very sloppy. A lot of penalties, a lot of turnovers. Some injuries as well. Will, is it time for us to take Cleveland seriously?
I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but that defense does look really, really good. And I feel like they, after that win on Sunday, I feel like that solidifies themselves as a top three defense in the league. They're playing out of their minds. That's pretty much why they're winning these games. I mean, no Deshaun Watson. They go out there and they beat the 49ers. Granted, the 49ers had an opportunity to win that game, but let alone they shouldn't have even been in that predicament. They did have a few injuries throughout the first half. I know Kittle went down early, and I know Debo was out, and McCaffrey also got hurt, which all big blows for them. Kittle came back, and I don't know about Debo or CMC did, but still, let alone they shouldn't have even been in that predicament. That defense played out of their minds. I feel like we can take them somewhat serious. Granted that the division they're in, it's looking like it's going to be between the Ravens and them once again.
Yeah, and it's going to be a detrimental loss for the San Francisco 49ers. It opens things up a little bit, and if Seattle had won this week, it would have looked a lot worse for San Fran. It would have been 2 1-loss teams in the NFC West. I'm not ruling out any other team winning the NFC West other than the San Francisco 49ers. The Seahawks have 2 losses. The Rams are right behind them with 3. All it takes is these wins in division, and I think that either of these teams could beat the 49ers when it comes down to it, when they face off. It's just the NFC West. That's how it is. You want to talk about how stacked this 49ers team is? There's holes on this team. There's holes on every team. And when Brock Purdy has to get the job done late in games, he can't do it. He's never done it. We haven't seen it. The only chance that he has had so far this year was against, or so far in his career, was against the Cleveland Browns, and that was the first loss that he has played the full game for. That's all you have to do. You got to stick in with this team throughout the whole game. Give them the chance to win the game at the end. Give your defense the chance to win the game at the end of the game. And I love the Seahawks defense to do that. I like the Rams defense to do that. I like a lot of these teams' defenses in the NFC to do that when we're talking about the bigger picture in the playoffs. I'll name a couple. The Eagles, the Cowboys, the Lions, the Buccaneers. This team, I'm not going to use the F word yet. I don't think that they're the F word, but I don't think they're the greatest team ever. And everybody is saying these things, and I've said these things. I took them as my lock of the week, and I think I'm cursed. I think I'm actually cursed. So I think I'm going to probably end up taking them again. Because I might just, if my lock of the week is going to lose every week, I'm going to use it against the NFC West.
I was going to say take the Patriots as your lock of the week so they would lose out for the rest of the year. Yeah, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum with you on that, Griff. I'm all in on the 49ers, and I think that this was, I don't want to say an important loss for them, but they needed to lose eventually. And they kind of have a gauntlet coming up where they're going to be facing the Eagles soon. They have the Seahawks coming up soon. They have very good opponents coming up, and I'm excited to see how this team stacks up because I trust this offense. I trust Kyle Shanahan, and I think people forget that Jim Schwartz-led defenses are undefeated against Kyle Shanahan. I feel like we should have brought that into factor when we were talking about this game last week. We didn't. We didn't have the nerd nuggets. I apologize for that. All right, next game, we're skipping a few ahead. We're going to talk about the New York Jets and the Philadelphia Eagles. This was a game that I really wasn't expected to talk about, if we're being honest, going into the week. And the Jets prevailed. The Jets shocked the Eagles. This was an upset. And Jalen Hurts did not look good. Griff, is this concerning for the Eagles? Because a lot of people are saying that he's a tush-push merchant.
I have a tough time disagreeing against that last case that you made right there. He throws for one touchdown. He added another from 7 people pushing him in the ass to get in the end zone. He does it every game. Every single game he does it. Like, why can't they just, like, flick it out to DeAndre Swift on, like, a toss once or twice? It'll still work because everybody knows it's coming. So they could actually do anything out of that set, literally anything. Just switch it up every here and there. But New York is in the Jets. They're one of those teams that could just beat anybody, but also lose out. Like, they could lose to the Giants next week after beating the Eagles, and then they could come back in a couple of weeks and beat the Bills. And then probably by week 10, Aaron Rodgers will magically be back. You guys saw the clips of him throwing the ball, and like he was like, actually, like, getting into it, using his legs and, like turning his, like, ankle and all of that, everything. It looks like muscles down there were being used while he was throwing. And doctors are saying, like, this is the most miraculous thing that they've ever seen in their lives. I was watching the Pat McAfee show, I Don't Know Why, yesterday, and Aaron Rodgers was on it. And he was like, I'm taking a very non-traditional route to this rehab. And he was like, I'm not doing anything like spiritual, like this isn't a spiritual thing. It's just that since nobody has ever done this doesn't mean that it can't be done. So I'm expecting him to be back. This defense is one of the best defenses in the league. And that's what won them the game. They only held the Eagles to 14 points in this game. The Jets are a team that if they can score 21 points, they're going to win a football game.
Honestly, like we said at the start, like this wasn't the game that I thought we were going to be talking about. I heard a lot of people taking, like, the play of the day was Jets money line. I was like, you guys are crazy. Like, that's never going to happen. And they went out there and won a game. And I feel like they continue to surprise us week in, week out, either for good or for bad. And, like, there's just so much going on with this team. I don't really, like, the whole Aaron Rodgers thing at the beginning of the game, really just that threw me in for a loop to start off. Like, he looks great. Like, I don't want, like, that's just, like, the craziest thing I've ever seen. Like, he looked better than he did when he was bringing out the flag week one. Like, I don't know what's going on. I feel like he could do that again. I mean, if this New York Jets team keeps finding ways to win a game, keeping them in record-wise, and Aaron Rodgers comes back healthy and can throw the ball, as he clearly was doing before the game, on Sunday, this team's like back. I like, and Breece Hall looked great. Like since they pretty much kind of took Dalvin Cook's role down, Breece Hall's been playing great. They look good. I feel like we can't take them. I think we have to take them a little bit more serious, especially if they're finding ways to win games on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. And it brings this weird dynamic into the AFC East where the Jets stack up very well, especially they didn't even have Sauce Gardner this weekend.
They didn't have any of their corners. They were calling up from the practice squad.
They stack up and match up very well with the powerhouses of the AFC. We're talking defensively as well, where they easily could have beaten Kansas City last Sunday night when we know what happened in that game. The Jets right now are sitting at, 3-3?
Yep.
And they very well could be 5-1. We're talking about them giving the only win to the Patriots, and I'm talking about that Kansas City game. Those are two games that they should have back, or that they wish they could probably have back, rewrite and win. And Zach Wilson right now, he just needs to do a good enough job to allow the defense to win games. And Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson are making the plays that we expect them to, and this Jets team is set up to be in a very good spot come playoff time, and I would not want to face them later on in the season when the defense really steps up and is healthy. And if somehow Aaron Rodgers makes the most miraculous comeback ever and you have him for the tail end of the season, basically, I don't want to say on rest, but a fresh Aaron Rodgers come playoff time is the ideal situation for the Jets. That's all I'm saying. All right, next game we're going to talk about Sunday night. We're staying in New York, where two other New York teams face each other. We have the Buffalo Bills at home versus the New York Football Giants. This was a good game. It was sloppy, but the end prevailed, and the Giants got robbed. Who wants to – I'm trying to think what my question is here. There's not really much to say.
Let's talk about the end of the first half. Let's talk about the end of the first half.
Talk us through the first half, or the end of the first half, at least.
Okay, I want to gauge you guys. Do you think that Tyrod Taylor, like, checked out of a play, was like, hey, let's run it with 11 seconds? I have a very difficult time believing anyone would do that. I have a hot take. I think Dable called that, blamed it on him in front of national television. That's why he, like, went off on him, was to look like it wasn't his fault. I know he went up and made the little check like this. I just have a tough time believing that happened. It, like, that can't be real life. It can't be real life. There shouldn't be an option. There should not be an option for the backup quarterback to audible out to a run with 10 seconds left at the end of the first half. That was the reason why they lost the game. They even had a decent second half. The defense looked good. The Buffalo Bills looked absolutely horrible. That was their chance to go and win that game, and it was a boneheaded move. I just don't see how you can't blame the coach in this situation. He's going right up to his quarterback, and I think that he's an absolute asshole, and he's trying to make it look like it's not his fault.
Like, that whole situation was atrocious. Like, I'm still mind boggled by that. This whole game was just like really something. I like the score, the everything. The Bills playing absolutely atrocious. I just don't really understand. Tyrod Taylor played last week too, and he didn't even look that bad. Like he's very usable in their scheme, their offense. Like, he can easily get the job done for them. There should be no issues out there. And when you're playing such a close game against the Buffalo Bills, who should be nasty, Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, even Zach Moss running the ball really good, and their defense playing somewhat decent, they're out there playing, they're putting up an absolute shitter of a game. And if you're the New York Giants out there and really nothing to show for this season, not playing well, you want to steal one from them at least. Like, come on, you got to do something. The end of that first half was just absolutely atrocious. You can't be letting that happen.
Yeah, with Saquon Barkley coming back, this New York Giants team has a level of stability for the first time really all season, where they have someone who can make plays for them on the offensive side of the ball. And I expect them to be kind of in this range of competitiveness where they're going to be in games. Saquon's able to keep them in games. This defense is decent enough to keep them in games, and we'll see where it goes going forward. All right. Los Angeles Chargers lose a close one against the Dallas Cowboys. This was a very important game for both sides. Dallas came off a really bad loss in Sunday Night Football against the San Francisco 49ers, and the spotlight was on them, right? This was do or die. You needed to win this game. Dak Prescott probably had his best game of the season against the Chargers. Will, where are you pressing the panic? Are you pressing the panic button on the Chargers right now? Because they should have, I feel like they should have won this game.
I am a little bit. I'm a little skeptical of the whole.
You're hovering around the panic button.
I'm hovering over it. You know, I'm keeping it.
The emergency latch is off.
Yeah, like, I flipped it up. It's just whether or not I'm ready to hit it, and I'm real damn close. I'm on a real short leash with this team. Kellen Moore is getting me a little aggravated. So is Staley. I feel like they need to be questioned at the helm of this. I mean, also, I feel like you have to hold Justin Herbert just as accountable. He did not play great on Monday night. He botched a few throws, very few important throws. He had Keenan Allen open, I believe, on third down, which was at least going to be a 25, maybe even 30-yard gain. Keenan Allen was doing his thing, and he just kept forcing it to him, it felt like. I feel like Joshua Palmer could have easily played a bigger role. I feel like they're not using Quentin Johnson enough. I feel like they haven't given him a good fair shell. They also have another rookie on that team with Mike Williams out to have that ability to really use their offensive weapons, because those guys have speed. And I feel like Keenan Allen should just be the security blanket for them. Gerald Everett's all right, and so is Donald Parham. Like, it's not it. This offense needs to be held accountable, as well as the defense. The defense did their thing. Dallas didn't look great. They didn't really come out there and really be like, oh, wow, this is the Dallas team that we saw at the beginning of the year, even though it's only been 6 weeks. But it's not the same electrifying defense. I mean, Micah Parsons played a role right when you pretty much wanted him to at the end of the game when they sacked him. I just was not a fan of the play call to end that last drive of the game when they totally could have came back. And I don't even remember the score, but I think, what was it, a field goal to tie the game? Or they needed a touch. Was it a field goal to tie the game?
They needed a field goal to tie it.
They easily could have gotten a field goal to tie the game there, and they were running some very questionable plays. I think they ran a play action on second down with, like, 40 seconds left. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, and this is a game where Justin Herbert needs to throw for 50 times. Like, stop running the ball. It didn't work. It wasn't going to work. It was never going to work. Justin Herbert needs to be in full control of this offense in games like this, and to only see Austin Eckler get 4 catches for 35 yards and also see what he did on the ground was atrocious. And I know that, you know, if you want to look into the analytic numbers, Austin Eckler didn't really have a great chance of booming in this game. Neither running backs on either side did anything in this game. It came down to which edge rusher was going to be more successful. Micah Parsons made the play in the fourth quarter, and that's what got the win. this team, the Chargers, I think at their best, could be very similar to the team that just beat them. I think that's why it was such a close game. Herbert is a lot better than Dak Prescott is. It's just about the weapons that Herbert has. And really just about the efficiency of this offense. When you lose a guy like Mike Williams and Joshua Palmer, who in the first quarter I thought had the potential to break out for a career day. He had three catches in the first quarter. He ended the game with four total catches, 60 yards. I think he had 40 of those yards in the first quarter. He was ripping that defense up in the first, and I didn't see him the rest of the game. Keenan Allen has to have 10-plus grabs if you want to go out and beat the Cowboys as well. It just didn't look good all around, and it's not even like Herbert had the most terrible day. He didn't throw for over 300. But it's, if Khalil Mack is going to actually do what he's been doing, they have to win games. He's playing well.
There's not much time left on him.
Defense isn't even playing that bad. The secondary is horrendous. They're never going to be good. But how is it the offense's fault? That should never be an issue with the Bolts. It should never be the offense. You have Austin Eckler, Justin Herbert, and Keenan Allen. That's more than half of the league has. It's stupid that you put up 17 points. You saw it in the first quarter, Stav. They went down, scored a touchdown. Dallas came back, scored a touchdown. This game should have ended in the 70s. It should have been like 40-35 to end this game. They should have been putting up points. Both offenses should have been putting up a lot more points than they should have. And I don't like either of these teams this year. I don't think either of these teams really have a good solid chance this year, Stav.
Yeah, they're kind of in that weird B tier of NFL teams right now.
I would even put the Chargers in a tier below the Cowboys.
That's what I was about to say. I was about to say Dallas is probably a tier above, but they're all right. They finally fed CeeDee Lamb the ball. I feel like that we've been waiting for this breakout game for CeeDee Lamb, but this game where they finally get him involved, and that's what they did. And I don't trust the Chargers secondary to really do anything against anybody. And I think we will see them kind of get exposed this week against the Chiefs. We're going to get to our previews right now, actually. Let's go rapid fire. Actually, no, quickly, we have lock of the week recap. I had the Rams -7, patting myself on the back, 5-1. Easy. I felt like the Rams were due. Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua. You guys, on the other hand, did not win. Will, talk about your pick.
Standing at 3-3, I kind of feel like I could be 5-1 right now, too. I have a couple close losses. I kind of feel like the New York Jets that we just talked about, where, you know, like, could have a late season resurgence, you know, some good picks, some good matchups, some real opening up. It's been a couple hard weeks of spreads. There's a lot of opportunity left, and I feel like this week could be another week where I can go out there and get the record of 4-3 and make that jump up to the next level.
Yeah, and I'm sitting down here at 1-4-1 after another tough loss the 49ers gave me. And, Will, you said you're feeling like the Jets. I'll keep it in the AFC. So I'm feeling like the New England Patriots right now. It's like you have an all-timer at the helm leading this, and the wheels fell off a while ago, and I'm just out there pushing the carriage. There's no wheels. I'm just pushing it like it's a sled through the dirt fields right now. I feel like Bill Belichick. When he has Mac Jones starting at quarterback, I feel like Michael Phelps, when Ryan Lochte lied about getting held at gunpoint at the Brazil Olympics, I feel like remember the Titans before they all got along. This is the worst I've ever felt in my life. My mentals have been taking a hit, and the sole blame to that is my record in locks of the week. So, Stav, I'd love to get on to our Week 7 preview.
All right. So, starting off with Thursday night football, this was a closer spread than I anticipated, to be honest. However, yeah. Trevor Lawrence is questionable going into the game. They say he avoided a major injury in that he's optimistic to play. That's all the updates we have as of right now. The Saints are favored at home by 1. I have the Saints in this game. I think nobody's realizing how good Alvin Kamara is. And Griff, I feel like you and I are kind of always picking the Saints, where we talked about this in the start of the regular season. This is probably their first legit quarterback that they face, but he's kind of hobbling around on one leg. Now we have an earthquake in this one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, anybody else have anything different?
I have a lot to say. There's been a power surge in my fantasy team. I know nobody cares, but I'm starting Derek Carr over Matthew Stafford this week, with all things considered. It's time for a change. The Saints, I don't know why, but if this spread was like, I feel like it should have been shifted in the Jaguars' favor, and I thought it should have been maybe Jags minus three. With Trevor Lawrence's injury, you know, uncertainty, you could say, I don't know how much I love Jacksonville in the spot. I put down Jacksonville originally in our doc. You've heard what I've been saying about the Saints all year. And right when I put down the Jags, I was like, this is the first time all year that I picked against the Saints. By the time we got all the way down here, I looked at the game. And I just don't think that they're going to stop this run game that the New Orleans Saints have. I think it opens it up perfectly for the pass game, for Derek Carr to really compete in this system. I think he's going to have a good game against this Jacksonville secondary. And I think that Jacksonville is going to struggle against a very tough New Orleans Saints defense. You said that this is, you know, the first legit quarterback that the Saints have faced. But, you know, what defense has Trevor Lawrence faced? You want to talk about Kansas City, I guess, early in the year? Buffalo, who they put up 25 on? Other than that, they played the Falcons, the Colts, the Texans. They played the Colts twice. I mean, Trevor Lawrence hasn't played anybody, and this is the toughest game that they've had all year. Yeah, no, that's why. I'm saying they put up 25 on them. I like the New Orleans Saints defense better than I like the Buffalo Bills defense, and that's the reason why I'm going to take New Orleans in this game.
I'm going to keep it light so we can keep it moving. Derek Carr looks pretty comfortable in that Saints offense that they're running. He feels really comfortable throwing the ball deep. He has his guys. I mean, Rahee Shaheed is going out there burning the secondary, and he's getting deep balls to him. He's finding him. Michael Thomas is catching balls. Like, he's doing his thing. And Alvin Kamara, their offense looks really complete. I also feel like the spread gives very weird vibes for this game. I feel like this is a situation where it almost feels like the Saints are going to win this game by more than a touchdown. It's not even going to be close.
All right, yeah, next game on the list. This is actually, I'm excited for this game. We have the Lions going to Baltimore to face the Ravens. Another earthquake here. We all have the Lions plus three. The Lions are on a roll. We're expecting them to kind of produce now, right? I'm not putting them, like we said, the upper echelon of teams in the NFC. I'm going to keep it at 49ers and Eagles. But right below them, knocking on the door, is the Detroit Lions. And you say that 3 years ago, I'd call you crazy. But what Dan Campbell has done to this program is nothing short of amazing. Jameson Williams back. He scored a touchdown last week. And now we're expecting to see Jahmyr Gibbs taking the lead running back role with David Montgomery being out. With my luck, it's probably going to be Craig Reynolds taking the majority of the carries. Fucking
same.
Anyways, Lions, earthquake. That's all.
Yep.
Next game on the list, we have the Raiders at the Bears. Griff, get us started here because you're different than what Will and I have.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Bears here, and I think that the Bears are going to do what the Bears do, and I think that they're going to end up screwing themselves out of the first pick, and it's going to start with another win this week. They beat a team in the Commanders who they put up monstrous numbers. Justin Fields has been kind of finding his rhythm back. It's been on and off, and I just think that they go out there and they win this football game, and I don't love the spread -3 towards the Raiders. Jimmy Garoppolo should be back off of injury, all things considered, right?
Mm-hmm.
He should be back. And I don't know. I just like the Bears in this game. I honestly think it's a toss-up. I'm going to say DJ Moore has another great day. He's playing pissed off.
I feel like this could be easily should have been the pick 'em game. I don't know why I get that vibe from this game. I mean, obviously the Bears went against the Commanders last week. But I'm going to go with the Raiders here, -3. I don't really know why I like them, but I do. I really have nothing for this game. I feel like it's going to be one of those games that's going to be kind of ass.
Yeah, this is a weird game. Not one that we definitely have circled on this list. But next, we have the Browns going to Indianapolis to face the Colts. Browns are 2-point favorites, and I'm hammering the Browns. I love the Browns this week. I'm all over them. Deshaun Watson actually didn't practice today, but he could be back. I just trust his defense way too much for the Colts to hang. And with the breaking news of Anthony Richardson being out for the rest of the season, that's a lot of news to bear. Shout out to Rich. That's the first of stop guys who are going down.
Next game.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Bills at Patriots. Bills. Fuck the Patriots. They suck.
Yep.
All right. Next. This is a shitty game. This is a slate. We have the Panthers traveling to New York to face the Giants. I have the Giants here. I always feel like Saquon Barkley is going to go crazy against the Commanders. I love the Giants.
I have literally no reason for taking the Commanders. It literally just the Giants are just a dumpster fire. Like I think that the Giants could be the worst team in the league.
I also have zero reasoning for bringing the. I mean, I guess like Sam Howell, UNC guy, go UNC. Like, rooting for a guy out there, Sam Howell. Yeah, you know.
All right. Anyways, next we have the Falcons going to Tampa to face the Buccaneers. Buccaneers are 2.5-point favorites. Desmond Ridder on the road sucks, and I think that this is the week that he gets benched. I have the Buccaneers here. The Buccaneers always, I feel like, are very good in division games.
Kyle Pitts scored a touchdown last week.
I don't know why I took the Buck. I mean, took the Falcons. I'm gonna take the Bucks.
Switching up too much. All right, next we have the Steelers at the Rams. Yeah, earthquake Rams. Yeah. All right, Cardinals at Seahawks. Wow. All right, Will, why do you like the Cardinals this week?
They're just a scrappy team. I don't know what it is. It's a divisional matchup, too. I can't figure it out with them. They go out there and they play. They look decent sometimes, and sometimes they look like shit. I feel like a divisional matchup, they got something they want to play for. It's more than just the game. It's their division as well. I feel like it's going to be a close game. Also, that spread is pretty big.
Yeah. Griff, talk us into your Seahawks. -8.
I'm frozen.
You are frozen.
I'm here now. Okay. Yeah. It's a big spread. It's a big spread. And the exact reasoning what Will said, it's a divisional matchup. This is a team that's scrappy in Arizona, but scrappy can only get you too far. This is, you know, they're going up against a team that has the potential to make the playoffs. They're in the division. They need this win. This is a must-win game for the Seattle Seahawks. They have to handle their business. And this is one of these games where this is, you know, the test. Is this a playoff team? They have to beat the teams that they should beat. Arizona is one of those teams. They can be as scrappy as ever, but scrappy can only get you so far when the other team across from you needs to win this game. I think that the Seahawks win by a touchdown and a field goal.
Okay. All right, next we have the Packers at the Broncos. Earthquake Packers. Broncos suck. Next. L.A. Chargers at the Chiefs. Will, you're staying on the Chargers wave here, even though you're hovering over the panic button.
Yes. So they covered the spread against the Cowboys, which I believe was like 4.5 or something like that. They covered that spread. And I'd consider the Cowboys defense a lot better than the Chiefs. And I feel like that offense has a lot better of things that they can possibly be doing. It's also another divisional matchup that we're talking about here. And I feel like this is a good – Herbert always plays up to his competition, especially when it's the Chiefs and it's Patrick Mahomes. This game is always interesting every single year. And I feel like +5.5 is good enough for them to cover this week.
The Chargers did not cover the spread that we have. All other spreads are irrelevant. Jeff, you and I are on the Chiefs. Yeah, Mecole Hardman – game changer.
Mecole Hardman, yeah, Super Bowl.
If Mecole Hardman wasn't on the Chiefs, I'd probably bet on the Chargers.
Mecole Hardman had 3 points to the spread.
Exactly. He's a swing of 3 points. All right, next, we have the Miami Dolphins traveling to Philly to face the Eagles. This game's going to be awesome. There's going to be a lot of points scored. Hopefully at least, right? I feel like we see a lot of these games that have all the hype and they don't live up to it, but this is one of the games that will, because we know Miami's going to score points. It's all about if Philly can match, and I think that they do. I think that there's a lot of buzz around the city of Philadelphia right now, and Sunday is a perfect example of that. I think that hypothetically, the Phillies could clinch a World Series, and the Eagles could be playing at the same time. So I have the Eagles -2. They're going to win. I don't see them losing 2 in a row.
Yeah, the Dolphins just – I don't believe them.
This is like the perfect game for the Eagles to go out there and win by a lot, I think. I mean, the Dolphins did just play the Panthers. I feel like this is a recipe for disaster against playing the Eagles at home.
Mm-hmm. All right, next, moving to Monday Night Football to wrap up the week. We have the 49ers traveling to Minnesota to face the Vikings. The 49ers are 6.5-point favorites after a loss against the Cleveland Browns, and it's another earthquake. And, Griff, I'm just going to toss it to you. Talk about what you have in your lock of the week.
All right, here's the thing. I'm 1-4-1. So I'm losing. Excuse you, Will. Nice mute button. If I'm going to keep losing, I might as well bring down the teams that I don't like. So I'm going to take the 49ers minus 6.5. I need the Seahawks to make the playoffs this year. I have the Seahawks win total over 10.5. They have to beat the 49ers at least one time to get that. And they need to do a lot more things this season. So I'm just going to do my job as a Seahawks fan and bring the 49ers down. Like I said, I'm 1-4-1. I'm at the bottom of the table. I'm on pace to get relegated. There's no chance. There's no chance I lose this. If I do, the 49ers lose. And if they win but don't cover the spread, I actually will have absolutely nothing to say on the next episode. I'll probably stay on the episode. I don't even know if I'll speak the whole episode, if that's the case.
Protest?
Wow.
Will, talk about your mock of the week.
Lions plus 3. Having the Ravens minus 3 is so disrespectful to the Lions. This game should be – this spread should be a lot closer than I think 3. It almost should be – like, I don't know. I don't like the Ravens minus 3. I love the Lions plus 3. The Lions team, they're very electric. The energy is there. Dan Campbell is doing amazing things for them. Love the Lions plus 3.
I'm glad to be back on my winning ways. Yep. I'm sitting at 5-1 right now. 2 games ahead of Will. I got the Packers minus 1. That's my lock of the week, fellas. And coming off of a bye against a pretty bad Denver Broncos team, I think that this is a perfect opportunity for the Packers to kind of reinstate themselves into the competition of the NFC North. Not for the win, but to kind of put themselves in second place and compete for a wild card. That's kind of where I put this team. And this team's fully healthy. Coming off of a bye, you have Christian Watson. I expect good things and big things out of the Green Bay Packers. And Griff, back up to you.
As simple as that, we got a hell of a weekend. As always, we have a slate of games on Sunday. We got a few good college football games that we'll be recapping on the other side. And also a lot of baseball, a lot of hockey. And hockey.
Yep.
I've been watching hockey. It's been crazy. Stav, I've been writing your cousin's picks. I wrote them last night. He went 2-0. I'm with him on Capitals money line tonight. And he doesn't even know it. I'm just like taking them, and once they hit, I just heart the message, and like maybe he notices, maybe he doesn't. But I've been riding with him the whole way. He's been serving me picks, and it's been awesome. I've been hitting on MLB as well, and it's great because I make all my money in the weekend, and then I lose it all in the NFL. If you guys couldn't tell, I'm 1-4-1 in the lock of the week. My cheeks are starting to get all rosy. It's the Irish skin. That means it's time to end the episode. We hope you guys enjoyed. We will catch you at the end of a beautiful weekend of football. And yeah, peace.